Blue Jackets fueled by a three-goal first period, two shorthanded goals in the game, and a sparkling performance by Elvis Merzlikins register a 5-1 victory over the Bruins here in Boston.
You know, there's been a couple of wins where I thought maybe we were turning the page. That hasn't transpired. What you want in the first 20 games, you don't want to be out of the playoff race. We're not out of the playoff race.
Afternoons with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Welcome in. It's WEEI Afternoons here on Boston Sports Original. I'm Christian Arcan. That's Andy Hart. Nice to have you with us here today on a warm, sunny Wednesday. No, Tuesday. Warm, sunny Tuesday here.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
I just turned into Adam Jones.
It's Tucker Tuesday.
Forget what day it is. It's a Ross Tucker Tuesday. That is correct. And according to Scoops Keefe, it is a bye-bye Monty Tuesday. Rich Keefe, moments ago, right after the grab bag, right after the random baseball player, which today I believe was Pat Rapp, who when I was a kid we all called Pat Crap because we were very, very innovative and creative. Yes. The announcement was made, according to Keefe, Jim Montgomery has been let go and Joe Sacco will take over. Joe Sacco, the assistant coach. Montgomery, obviously, we just we'll get into that game last night. I don't think that last night was the death blow. I think that this was a decision that had been made. I think even if they had won that game last night, you still would have probably heard this today or maybe given them another day or two, but I don't think this would have really changed anything. It just so happens to come on the heels of what I considered to be rock bottom, and I don't know. I mean, maybe there is no rock bottom with these Bruins. Everything sucks. Everything sucks with this team. The offense sucks. The defense sucks. The power play sucks. Two shorthanded goals. Are you kidding me? The penalty kill sucks. Swayman sucks. And it pains me to say that because I fought hard for Swayman to get paid. But I'm at the point now where I think you play Corposalo and you have him be the starter and Swayman be the guy who spells him. I mean, that's what it's come to. I still blame the Bruins a little bit for dinking around with him without having a backup plan at goalie, but he's been crap, worse than I could have imagined. And you can say that about basically the entire roster. I thought yesterday, from the moment I saw that they called up that goon from Providence, and he goes out there and fights Olivier, and then they give up a goal 2 minutes later. I was like, that's it. There's no spark. There's no effort. Everyone's afraid to shoot. Mason Lorai can't even corral a simple pass, giving up that shorthanded goal on that first one. They're getting outskated. They're getting outworked by every team in the league on what seems like a nightly basis. You had to fire Jim Montgomery. I don't think Don Sweeney should be far behind them. This roster sucks. He's failed at drafting what should be the next generation of Bruins that are going to come in and sort of take over. See if they respond to a new head coach, and if not, I say blow this roster up. I'm tired with this. I really don't. There's not much that I really want to even hold on to here. I've basically had. I heard Wiggy this morning talking about trading Pasternak. Everybody jumped all over him. I didn't think that was a hot take. I don't think trading McAvoy would be a hot take. I don't think trading Swayman would be a hot take, and that's coming from me here. Get some draft picks. Get some promising young players. Maybe swap for another disgruntled star who's on another team and start over, because I've basically seen enough here. Jim Montgomery was going to get fired. We all knew that. But what do we also say this entire time, Andy? We said that's not the whole problem here. Jim Montgomery's not the whole reason why this thing's going the way it's going. It's beyond him. It's well beyond him. And I'm ready to blow it up. I don't know about you. I'm ready to blow it up.
Yeah, I think that's an extreme reaction because legitimately a month and a half ago, people were talking about this team as a sneaky cup contender. So there weren't all that many cries for this team stinks. It's poorly constructed. People were buying into Patrice Bergeron 2.0. Remember those stories? Lindholm. I mean, he's basically Bergeron. It's going to be the same.
I do remember
same.
That.
Somebody wants to burn those and delete those from the internet. That'd probably be a smart thing right now. Any writer probably doesn't want their name attached to that. The coach is the first to go because that's the only solution when across the board everybody is underperforming, right? You can't point to any one area, any one aspect of the game. They all stink. There were various aspects last night in that game where you're like, this team is just, I don't know if snake bitten's the right word because that makes it sound like luck, and I don't think it's luck.
It's not luck.
It's effort. It's
there's
energy.
They're having some bad luck, but that's not it. Yeah.
But like you see Carlo, like your boy Swayman made the save, and then Carlo comes rushing in, pushes it into the net. There was
and it got worse after it got worse
absolutely.
From there.
To me, the low light, and I forget exactly when it occurred, but they had a shorthanded breakaway where it was one guy. The Bruins stopped it. It wasn't a shorthanded goal. There were enough of those. But it was 1-on-3, and the Bruins were struggling to maintain the puck. One guy was just giving them fits. And to me, that was sort of symbolic of where they are right now. It's total system failure. And I would say, though, if you think of trading Pasta, then you absolutely should consider firing Sweeney. To me, those types of moves go hand in hand because he built a roster around a high-paid goalie, a high-paid scorer, a high-paid defenseman.
Yep.
They're all underachieving. It's a rich man's version of Elliott Wolf. I think Elliott Wolf did this in the offseason. Horrific plans. It was just cheap plans. Okorafor, and we'll draft this other right tackle and move him, and you're like, this is a mess. I don't trust you anymore because of what you did. So if you're thinking of breaking up the core of this team, Sweeney absolutely has to go with him. He's not the one making those decisions. Somebody else has to.
Right.
Neely, you bring somebody else in. My issue would be, I think people are reacting to the play, obviously, but on a too grand a scale. Like, you return all your scoring from last year. You were a playoff team last year. You won a series last year.
You're a 100-point team last year.
Right. Yeah. And now the roster stinks, and the offseason was part of it. Obviously, Lindholm is an incredible disappointment. He was okay for, like, what, 3 or 4 games, it felt like, to start. Incredible disappointment. He's down on himself. Oil and water, we heard, between him and Pasta, the whole thing.
Who's not having a good season either, by the
way. Pasta had no shots last night, right?
Not one shot on goal.
How does that happen?
Good question.
How can you be that caliber of a player and not have any shots? Even if you or make it 2 periods through, don't you just start shooting anytime you touch the puck just to, like, break the seal, trying to get something going? This team needs, you know, Bridget was on with us. They need to score goals. They need to put pucks on the net. They need a boost. And your goal scorer, for a team that doesn't have a lot of firepower offensively, doesn't shoot, goes a whole game shooting. Now, I don't think he actually got fired last night. I said to you, I thought the 7-2 loss was the bottom and, like, okay, he's fired. Now it's just figuring out when exactly to do it. Luckily, the Bruins didn't screw it up by, like, going on a win streak after that.
Right.
They've been outscored, like, well, like 16-5 in their last 3 games since then or something. It's terrible. It's terrible. But to me, there is an overreaction point. You bring in Tsako, you have a new coach, and you see what happens, right? Like, you still 2/3 of a season to go.
Yep.
The last ditch effort by Montgomery, I give him credit. The last Hail Mary he threw was, well, we're in the playoffs. Right?
Sure,
like,
are.
Which is true. You can't say that's not true. He's in the playoffs, and he probably would try to hang on until Thanksgiving if they had given that opportunity, right? Because if you're in the playoffs in Thanksgiving, you're in the playoffs.
Yep.
That's how it works around here.
They are a point up in the second wild card. The Islanders and the Flyers are 1 point behind them. The Senators, Sabres, Penguins are 2 points behind them. And the Jackets, Red Wings, and Canadians, who are the worst teams in the Atlantic, or in the Eastern, I should say, are 3 points behind them. So it's, I mean, listen, it's easy to make the playoffs is what I'm trying to say here. And all these teams are all very close to the Bruins.
This is a bad team right now.
Yes.
Well, like, we've been saying that for a while because they just, and no, there's no discrepancy Mayo style. Are they a bad team? Are they playing badly? No. When you're 20 games into a season, you're a bad team. The quarter of the season is over. You have an identity, and it's a really, really bad identity. Now, when you start parsing things, does Swayman deserve more or less of the blame? Do they deserve blame for dealing with him? I don't know. But if it's universal across the board that everybody's underachieving, and you, in our email before the show, you put all the stats, power play, specialty, this, that, it all stinks. You stink at everything.
You ready? You want these numbers?
Yes.
All right. The Bruins currently are 31st in the NHL in goals scored per game, 2.4.
How many teams are there?
There are 32.
Okay, good to know.
They are 27th in total points with 126. They are 32nd. In power play percent, and when I say points, I mean goals and assists, not like points in the standings, like players on the team. 32nd in power play percentage, 11.7. That's worst in the league. They are 25th in penalty kill. They are 28th in goals against, and I can't believe it's that high, and they are 24th in save percentage. They suck at everything. They suck at everything.
Literally.
That's not just, well, the coach assist, the message isn't getting through anymore. This is them not showing up on a nightly basis. This is them not getting back to basics. Elias Lindholm right now has 2 goals and 7 assists. He is on pace for 8 goals and 29 assists on the season, and he's a -8. He has been brutal. As you said, David Pastrnak, no shots on goal. I think he's on pace for 33 goals and 37 assists this year. He was being talked about like a 50-60 goal scorer this year, and he is not even giving you half of that, it doesn't seem like right now. Charlie Coyle has been bad. I know he had the goal last night, but he's been bad. Morgan Geeky skating on the first line. There's been enough, and I give Montgomery at least credit for trying other things, for trying to jumble the lines, for trying to get guys going and put different matchups together and different partnerships and combinations. But, man, nothing has worked. Nothing really seems to be lighting a spark. None of these guys really seem all that engaged. And that, to me, is not just a coach problem. I'm sorry. I don't think Joe Sacco is going to come in here and suddenly they're all going to remember how to play hockey. Like, this is they're broken. They're a broken team right now.
And the problem with Sacco, for me, is he's here.
Right.
Like, so he hasn't passed along any ideas, said anything to anyone along the way. Like, what is he going to do? And I know it's how it works in sports. And you often get that short-term little bump in coaching change for whatever reason in most sports. But the thing that is most alarming here is you aren't the Red Sox or the Patriots. You're not in some form of rebuild, retooling, building up towards something. You're coming off a 100-point season that you won a round of Stanley Cup playoffs. You have high-paid homegrown talent, guys that you retained at elite money. You brought in new talent, so don't say you're the Red Sox or Patriots where you had all this money, why didn't you spend it? They spent. They just didn't get any return on their investment. And that makes it more, you can't even take the positive side. You can't even say, well, in 2 years, or the Patriots are going to have a first-round pick that's going to be really high, and then this money. Like, where's the future? If you're right, and this team just stinks, and you're blowing it up, this is a long-term issue. This isn't a one-year, two-year issue. This is a long-term issue. And that's where I say, to me, that's reactionary. Because a few months ago, everybody was trying to talk themselves into this being a good team.
Not me. A few months ago, everybody said I was overreacting when I freaked out after those Florida games. Oh, yep. Arkin, come on, it's too early. Is it still too early? They're firing the coach.
Nope.
Right? Was I overreacting? Maybe I was. It was the first game of the season. I know what I saw. We all watched the same team. We all watched the same game.
Yep.
We were all expecting a different start to the season. And, yeah, maybe I jumped the gun a little bit in terms of I don't think this is right and I think there's something wrong here. Then they lost to him again. All right. Then they went to Boston. They got pushed around and lost to him again. And that's when the alarm bell started going off. So to everybody who said, oh, Arcand, you're overreacting. Here's overreaction Arcand again. Here he is making a big deal out of nothing. They just fired the coach. All right. They just fired the coach after two 100-point seasons and making it to the second round of the playoffs last year. So if you think I'm overreacting, what do you think the Bruins are doing? What do you think Cam Neely's doing right now? Is he overreacting? I don't think so. I think this was the move. And I think that there are a bunch of other people who should start feeling not so safe on this team right now in this front office and really all throughout the organization. I don't think that anybody should feel safe right now. It's that bad. And that's unfortunate because this was not coming into the season, I expected. You're right. I expected this team to be better coming into the season. It took me one game to realize, oh, wait, this isn't what we were expecting. This isn't what we were hoping to see. This thing it wasn't off the rails yet. It's off the rails now. And I don't know how you get it back on. I don't even know if you do it this season. I don't know what you do this season. This season's starting to already feel like a lost season.
100%. Oh, absolutely. This feels like a lost season. It's kind of felt like a lost season for weeks, which is weird.
Yeah.
Because we're just kind of getting the quarter pole, and it's felt like it was lost for weeks. And that's where I do. So it's weird. I don't know. Do you give them credit for not giving him an extension and making that mistake? Or do you say, well, if you didn't want to give him an extension, maybe that was the sign you should break up, right? Like, if you're not willing to give her the engagement ring, well, what are we doing here? Where's this relationship going? Because I feel like they created the atmosphere that compounded the issues. Now, do I think that's all of it? Do I think his contract is the be-all, end-all, that's why they stink? Absolutely not. But that made it worse. We started talking about his job security before the season started.
Yep.
Right? Like, you created an environment, and then their play festered and like fueled the discussion of the problem, the coaching. Should he be fired? When will he be fired? It became when. Actually, it wasn't should. It became when.
When's it going to happen?
A long time ago. And now it finally drops. But to me, the next step of blowing it up, that's the big one. This feels like a formality to me today. Not to be disrespectful of his employment, but it felt like he was dead man walking for a while. I think he felt that. We've played the various cuts. The one where he was, I don't know. Just like a lost, beaten man. But now, if you're saying blow it up, if you're saying Wiggy, trade Pasta, that is altering the landscape of your team for years to come.
Yeah.
Because, A, you're trading away arguably your best player, certainly mm-hmm. your best scorer, and, B, what are you getting in return? Like, now you're going down Mookie Road.
Oh, sweet. We got some Jeter Downs, and we got some Verdugo, and whoever the hell else they got in that trade. Like, and the other team has the great player. And so that's where I think...
Bit of a difference.
What?
Mookie Betts was an MVP, and he won a World Series. I mean, like,
no,
you know, David Pastrnak is a guy who disappears at the end of these seasons. And frankly, I think represents some of the futility that you've seen from this team over the last 13 years. I mean, really, like, David Pastrnak, as good as he is and as talented of a scorer as he is, I think is one of the first faces that pops into my head. Him and Bergeron and some of these other guys, when they just, you think about the end of the season, you think about their disappointing first round or second round exits, you think about them in 2019 having a path paved for them right to the Stanley Cup and then blowing it to the Blues. I mean, he was around here for all of that. I'm not exactly sure what part of the culture that we're so dead set on holding on to. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, the Red Sox, at the very least, you could say with Mookie Betts in 2018, it was the best team they'd ever had. And they won the World Series, and it seemed like they had this young group and all of that. Like the 2011 team, kind of, right? I mean, like in 2011, the Bruins were a young team with a bunch of forwards who all got drafted right around the same time and all kind of grew up together, and they were the next generation, and they got off on a great start and won a Stanley Cup. And it seemed, and it wasn't the first year they were all together, but it was early on in all of their careers. They were all in their mid-20s or early 20s. And then it just didn't click again after that. And you stuck with it because you still had these talented guys. They were all liked playing together. They all wanted to be in Boston. And they all got you to the playoffs on a yearly basis, it seemed like. But how many times did they gag it away? How many times did they get beat in the first round? And you thought, wow, I really thought this team was better than that. I don't really look at this team over the last 13 years and see a culture that I'm going to miss, you know? Like, I don't know. I'm ready for the next chapter of whatever Bruins hockey is, because these guys, I mean, this thing is, it's now to the point where we don't have to wait till the end of the season. I've been yelling about this all year. We don't have to wait till the end of the season to be let down. You're getting let down right here in the very beginning of the year, and that's unacceptable to ownership, obviously, and the management. They fired the coach. The next step here is you got to hold the players accountable. And how do you do that? By bringing in Joe Sacco or by making a big trade and saying, hey, anybody else, you know, this is no one safe. Anybody else wants to glide along like this and not take the season seriously and not get back and, you know, not mishandle pucks and give up shorthanded goal and all this crap that they're doing all year long, you're not safe either, all right? So it's not just Jim Montgomery.
I think my issue then is more...
No shots on goal, David Pastrnak? Like, come on.
But you know he's a good player.
Sure.
And you know he's a talented scorer. My issue is, you trade that away, what am I getting in return? Is it an NBA-style trade? Are we trading, like, two max contracts so at least I get somebody in return that I want to watch and I hope can score and I hope... Because
that's what I'd prefer. I mean, that's what I prefer.
Or is it like,
it doesn't have to be that.
Two first-round picks and a this and a that, and I'm like,
they're trying to get my attention back there. Yes, Brian.
I was going to say, what if you do like what the Panthers did with Huberdeau, where you trade one of your good players for Brady Tkachuk, right? Mm-hmm. They traded Huberdeau for Matthew Tkachuk, got him to two straight finals. You do something similar with Pastrnak, get his brother, Brady Tkachuk, who was like a 30-goal scorer a few years ago, and try and get some of that Tkachuk edge and do sort of what Florida did.
I mean, I don't hate it. I don't want to blow up in terms of you're not getting return on your talent, right? Like, because quite honestly, right now they're unwatchable.
Yeah.
Like, you start these games, you sit down
3-0,
and then it's down 2 or 3-0. It's like, well, what else is on? Is there a football game on? Is there some show I want to catch up on? Because they are unwatchable, and we've learned that lesson. We're just exiting that lesson, I believe, with the New England Patriots. We're just exiting it. And I didn't say we're winning. I said we're exiting the unwatchable phase. We now actually kind of like watching the Patriots again, even though they lose, right? And that's about talent. That's about upside. That's about expectations. You have a young player that you want to watch. I don't want to go into the world of, well, I don't really need to watch the Bruins for 2 years because,
right,
you know, they have no talent. They unloaded all their veteran talent. We're resetting the books, the things we've heard in Foxborough or with the Red Sox.
Well, when you reset, you have different expectations. Right now, the expectations are 100 points, at least around in the playoffs, being at the top of the division and all that. I mean,
right,
that's general. That's
what the
expectations of this team should be, and they're not there. So if you want to lower them, then you got to lower them. You know, I'm sorry. Like, that's the way it goes.
I guess my point is I would prefer... Now, the Sacco thing worries me because, again, the in-house candidate, I don't really know how much he can do,
generally what happens when a guy gets fired in season. So.
And does it usually work?
Did with Bruce Cassidy a little bit.
Cassidy, kind of.
I mean, I just...
But it was the next year that it really sort of took hold, I think. But, yeah.
You know who I was joking with a buddy that I would love to see? Is Milbury. Just like come in and know you have a short shelf life and know you're doing this for no time, but just like say whatever you think, slap people around, kind of do what he does on the radio, but do it in their dressing room. Mm. And then, okay, you guys want to go back to a normal coach now because we brought in the whack job who's going to kick you in the butt and try to slap you around and figure out how to get the best out of your talent.
Who's even available? You know, like who's a coach out on the street right now? Quenneville? You don't want Quenneville. I mean, I know he's won Stanley Cups and everything, but that all the whole thing in Chicago was awful. I mean, he was there for a lot of really bad stuff, so I don't know. I'm not sure. I'd have to go and look at some of the names on the list here. I hadn't really prepared for that. I just assumed it would be someone that was going to be in-house, either Sacco or Chris Kelly or somebody like that. If you start looking outside the organization or, you know, down in Providence or whatever, like, fine. That's generally the way this team operates, but it's
Bill Belichick's out there.
Bill Belichick is out there.
Good coach is a good coach.
That's true. Just ask Ted Lasso. You know, doesn't even have to be the right sport. Doesn't have to be at all different equipment. All that stuff doesn't make a difference. 617-779-7937. It is a Ross Tucker Tuesday, and we are going to talk with Ross here in just a second, but I don't want these Bruins calls to hang out on the line too long, so let's go to David in the car. Go ahead, David.
Good afternoon, guys. So here's the issue that I see with the Bruins. You know, you can bring all the coaches. Look what happened with Bruce. He left. He went somewhere else. He wins the championship.
Sure did.
Your problem, your hardcore problem, is your players.
Yeah.
What you need to do is bring in whoever you want. Doesn't matter. You need to take your star players, either get rid of them or sit their butts down. Let the rookies play. Let the bench play. Bring guys from Providence. Let them show you what they can do, because that's what this organization needs right now, because your star players cannot perform, and you're letting them dictate how the coaches should be, who should be a coach, and this and that. And that is the problem with that team.
It is a problem, David. I got one big issue with what you said, though, and that is that they don't have anybody in Providence. They don't. They had to call up some goon yesterday. They don't have anybody down there. Matt Patras keeps getting sent back. Like, they don't have that kind of talent because Sweeney didn't draft it.
Yep.
Because he's not good at drafting. He's good at making in-season trades, and he's pretty good with free agents here and there, although this
you
season
sure
he
that?
Isn't. I think in the past he has been, but right now, definitely not. In general, I think he's not doing a good job, and that's a big part of why we are where we are right now and why they can't call people up and why they can't just say, here, you know, Providence Bruins, get in there and let's go see what you have. They don't have anybody. Stiz, what do we have from Milbury here?
Well, this is from when he was on with the Greg Hill Show.
How long ago?
Probably about a month ago.
Okay.
And this is what he had to say when the talks about firing Monty were coming up.
I may have issues with his approach and that sort of thing, but I think it would be it's unfair right now. I think this is on personnel.
He's right. I mean, he's not right in the sense that it's not Monty's fault at all. Monty does have to go. I think they all have to go. There has to be a clean sweep here. It's time to clean house. That's what I think.
I just wish there was more of this before the season started. Feels like,
hey, listen, I was there on day one.
You were on day one.
I was saying,
and you're not
things.
Premature if you're right, right?
Right.
Like, it's not too early. You're not overreacting if you're right. But I didn't hear any of this in the offseason. All the hockey experts were telling me, good team, maybe a sneaky cup contender, win a couple rounds in the playoffs. Oh, Lindholm is going to be Bergeron, and Swayman's the best goalie in hockey, and all these things. Now, all of a sudden, the roster stinks, and they're incapable of doing anything on a sheet of ice.
Yep.
A little bit of a contradiction there. Seems a little bit like you waited, saw that they stink, and then said the roster stinks. No one wanted to say the roster stunk when the roster was already before your eyes and being put together.
Yeah, I don't think anyone expected this. 617-779-7937. We'll get to your Bruins phone calls. And coming up next, it's a Ross Tucker Tuesday. Ross Tucker, Odyssey Sports, joins us right after Stiz gets you caught up on what's trending.
This is Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho. H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-C.
WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcand, Andy Hart. And joining us right now on the line is Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day. Be delicious. Tucker, how we doing?
Awesome. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. And it's good to have you on today. The Patriots took a tough loss against the Rams, a winnable game. A lot is being made of the coaching job that Jerod Mayo did in that game. A lot of people, including us, think he was a little too conservative. We haven't really talked to you much about the job Mayo's doing and how he's brought this team along this year. What would you grade Mayo through 11 weeks as his job coaching this team?
B plus maybe.
Ooh,
yeah, I'd say B plus. I think he's doing a pretty good job. I mean, Listen, they are competitive now. You know, there was a time, there was a stretch there where he wasn't. It's funny because it would have been an A the first couple weeks. Then it dropped down to a C for after that. I feel like it's kind of stabilized in the B, B plus area. You know, on the one hand, those guys are playing really hard for him, and they've been competitive in how many games straight now, which is a really good sign for a team whose roster is one of the worst in the NFL and has a rookie quarterback. The flip side is, though, like, they should have won that game or at least covered the 4.5 for me on the Even Money Betting Podcast. But, like, these mistakes are what drive me crazy. Now, like, there's nothing Mayo can do about the drops. But it's just crazy to think about what Drake May's numbers would have been if there weren't for drops. But it's like the penalties. I mean, Polk with the false start on 4th and 1, you know, you have an illegal formation. Those are the things that on some level I do put on Mayo a little bit that are frustrating, very, very frustrating. I just can't believe how good Drake May is and or how well he's playing. It's the rest of the team that's letting him down. He's, like, carrying them for a guy that they didn't even want to put in the game, like, 5 weeks ago. They didn't want to put him out there, and now he's the one carrying the team to competitiveness.
So that leads me into my question, because I'm a huge Drake May guy. I wanted them to draft him as of, like, last December, and he has been as good as I had hoped. But I'm a little surprised at the national sort of universal adulation thrown his way by everybody for a guy who really isn't winning, kind of turns the ball over every week, kind of turns the ball over with the game on the line in multiple occasions. It almost feels unprecedented. It's one thing to look at Jaden Daniels winning games and everybody loves him. Everybody loves Drake May, and he's not winning and he's not taking care of the football. Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me, because everybody knows how bad it was when Brissett was still in there, whatever those games were, games 3 through 6 or something like that.
Yep.
So we saw it. You know, like we saw what it looked like with a veteran backup quarterback and how bad it was. And I also think it's like Drake May, okay, is like the movie we all wanted to watch, but they made us wait to watch it. But we didn't really have high expectations for it. We thought it would be okay at best, and it turns out it's good. So if you were waiting for an okay movie and you finally watch it and it's actually good, you think it's better than it probably really is. I think there's some truth to that. I really do. I think expectations are a lot in life. Mm. There's nothing worse than people telling you, it's the greatest show ever. You gotta watch it with your wife, dude. And then you're like, yes, it's pretty good. Like, but it's not that great. Whereas if you like stumble upon something, you're like, oh my gosh, this show's awesome. When there's no expectations are a lot. Expectations make a huge difference in life. And I think the expectations for Drake May were so low that he's exceeding them by a lot, which is part of what changes people's opinions and the narratives.
We're talking to Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. He's brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Ross, I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a report all week. Burt Breer had it last weekend. Tommy Kern confirmed it on our airwaves here that the Crafts were looking for outside help, perhaps, or just calling around asking for help on the development and treatment of Drake May. It's been something that's been discussed a lot here over the course of the week. What do you think about ownership doing that, and how do you think that May's progression has been going here under the watch of Jerod Mayo and Alex Van Pelt?
So I don't know what that means. What does it mean they're calling around to do what?
Basically, the idea was, and from the report, it was that they don't want to make the same mistakes that they made with Mac Jones, and that they're calling for advice. Now, we didn't get who they were calling, but that they're calling for advice on how to bring along and develop a rookie quarterback. Just, you know, basic ideas, things like that. It was called by some people due diligence. Other people thought maybe they were undermining the current staff that's here right now. What are your sort of thoughts on that whole idea?
That is interesting. I had not seen that from Albert Breer, who, by the way, was my guest today on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
Got to ask him about it.
Definitely could have said that today. Give me a little bit of a heads up. That would have been a nice thing to have on the show today. Thank you, Albert, if you're listening, driving around Boston. You know, I don't know, guys. I guess I could go either way there. I'm a big believer in due diligence, so it's hard for me to ever be critical of someone doing their due diligence. I can see how maybe the current coaching staff and or front office wouldn't love that. Like, that wouldn't make them feel great. But what I would tell those guys is, you know, if you continue to show progress as a team and individually with Drake May, you don't have anything to worry about. You know, like, just do prove it with how you perform and how Drake performs under your tutelage, and you don't have to worry about, you know, losing your job or them bringing somebody else in.
So, Ross, reality is that we're about in draft prep season here in New England because people are following the draft pick. You and I debated the value of a draft pick versus winning games. So I probably know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyways, based on your background. Just in a purely philosophical world, if you could give Drake May for next year an elite left tackle or an elite wide receiver, which would you give him?
It's a really good question.
Ooh, do you have a really good answer?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. You know, I think it's receiver. I think it's receiver. I'll tell you why.
Wow. Upset. That's an upset.
The lineman picked a receiver.
How about that? Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's go back, okay? Let's go back a few years, and let's pretend we're the Cincinnati Bengals. And we're on the clock, and we can either take Ja'Marr Chase or Penei Sewell.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people said Sewell. Some people said Chase. They're both fantastic players. You would obviously love to have either. It's hard for me to argue that Penei Sewell has a greater impact on wins and losses than Ja'Marr Chase. Really hard to argue. And I think where I come down on it is, let's say elite receiver and average left tackle, you're going to have more production than average receiver and elite left tackle. You know, what you don't want is below average left tackle. So while it would be nice to have an elite player at that position, I'd rather have an elite receiver and believe I can get by with an average left tackle.
I know it pained you to say that, Russ.
Maybe it does pain me to say it, but
I can hear the pain in your voice.
You guys bring me on every week because I am an elite analyst that tells you guys the truth because you need to know the truth, and the answer is receiver. It is.
All right, that is elite analyst Ross Tucker joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Tucker, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. See you, dude.
All right. Thanks, that is Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. If you missed any of that, you can check it out on the Odyssey app. We'll resume with the Bruins. And also, we have some Red Sox news. I don't know if we call it news, but we do have some Red Sox reports regarding Juan Soto and some other teams who are now in on the bidding. We'll get to all of that with your phone calls next.
WEEI,
New England Sports Original. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
I'm going to put the Red Sox in there, and I put them in there a week ago when I talked about the Soto negotiations, and I said expected to be in along with a number of other teams. I think the Giants and the Blue Jays. The Giants and Blue Jays fans were fine with it. The Red Sox fans got all upset. I think at me, too. I don't know why. I understand they haven't spent. I think maybe they were concentrating on soccer. I don't know. Still recovering from the Mookie Betts mistake. I'm not sure what was going on there, but I do expect the Red Sox to be in. I mean, they've been a little quiet. You may not hear a lot about that, but I believe the Red Sox will be in. They're one of the six teams.
John Heyman talking about Juan Soto and the Boston Red Sox. We'll get to your Bruins calls here in just a minute. In case you missed it, Scoops Keefe at the end of Jones and Keefe saying that Jim Montgomery's out. Joe Sacco will take over. Big changes there for the Bruins, and potentially big changes here for the Red Sox as well. If you're a gullible sucker like Andy Hart, then you're very much believing all of this. The Red Sox reportedly had a very productive meeting with Soto, 3 hours of chatting about all the great
Dominican
things.
Barbershops.
The Dominican barbershops, facilities at Fenway Park and all this other, the way that they evaluate players. And I understand wanting to know all that. I mean, I don't think that there's anything wrong with Juan Soto before he signs a decade-long contract wanting to know, hey, how do you guys build a team? Are you good with player evaluations? What do you value? All of that stuff. I mean, it's important. It's a long, long time that he's going to be on whatever team that he signs with. He also met with the Toronto Blue Jays, the Mets, the Yankees. The Dodgers have scheduled a meeting.
Son of them.
And the Philadelphia Phillies have also scheduled a meeting. ESPN's Jesse Rogers surveyed 18 MLB executives and insiders on Soto's destination. Would you like to hear what they picked?
If it's the Red Sox, sure.
Then I guess you don't want to hear what they picked.
Then what are we doing this segment?
ESPN's Jesse Rogers surveyed 18 executives and insiders. 12 of them said he would go to the, take a guess.
Dodgers.
No.
Yankees.
Yes. 12 of them said he'd go back to the Yankees. 4 of them picked the
Blue Jays.
Mets.
Oh, Mets.
And 2 picked the Blue Jays.
Everybody was in a New York state of mind.
Yes, except for the 2 in the Canada state of mind.
I don't rule out the Dodgers. When they're
I don't either.
Like,
how can you? I mean, they sign everybody.
Right,
they
that's
literally
what I mean.
Sign everybody. Rogers wrote, more of our panel agreed on where Soto will sign than on how much money he'll get. A common belief from our respondents was that the Yankees will match or come close to matching any number Scott Boras brings them to keep Soto in pinstripes. The message we heard from our insiders was clear. The Yankees are not going to let their stars walk. That happens to other teams. There was also a strong belief that Steve Cohen would meet any financial demand and that the Red Sox would be facing stiff competition when it comes to that department. Now, we heard from Spear, I want to say, that the Red Sox would be willing to go into the $600 million range. And a lot of people saw that and said, yeah, great. That's, I think, the baseline.
You think
I hate to say
it. North of that?
I think it's going to be north of that.
Challenge
yes.
the, oh, it was $700 million for Ohtani last year?
Be close to that. I don't know if it's going to be $700 million, but I think you're going to be over 6.5. Yeah, I think it's going to be over 650. I think that's probably when it's going to start to get competitive, and you'll go from there. And I don't know if it's only going to be about money for Soto, but I do know this. It seems like the Red Sox had first crack, and I ranted and raved about this last week. They had a 3-hour meeting where they didn't talk money. The meeting with the Yankees, I don't know how long it was, but I can guarantee you that they didn't have to talk about the neighborhood. They didn't talk about the facilities. They didn't talk about the coaching staff. They didn't talk about player evaluation. They didn't talk about any of that stuff. What do you think they talked about? They said, any number you get, any offer that you get, you bring it back here, we'll beat it. That's probably what they said.
Probably.
And the Red Sox, if they wanted to, since they had first crack at it, could have made an offer that would have kept them in the seat and not taken no for an answer. If they really wanted it, if that's really what they wanted to do. And they didn't. They didn't even talk money. According to Sean McAdam, they did not bring up money at all. They did not discuss finance, to quote Robert Kraft. That wasn't part of the agenda. And maybe this is the stage of these negotiations where they felt it was inappropriate to talk about money. Which, by the way, if Scott Boras is the agent, it's never inappropriate to talk about money. Come on. That's an absurd thing. And a lot of people tweeted me that. Oh, come on, Ari, you don't know anything. It was a preliminary meeting. They're not talking about that. Meanwhile, a couple days later, Carlos Baerga comes out and says the Mets offered $660 million All right, so that was their first meeting. I thought it was too early to talk about money. I guess not. I guess only with the Red Sox it was too early to talk about money, which I think should tell you a lot right there. Are you still holding out hope on this? Do you still think that there's a chance here?
Not really.
No? Okay.
I've kind of given up.
I've beaten you down.
Well, I kind of didn't necessarily think Soto was going to be the guy anyway, because I'm not sure he wants to come here. Doesn't seem like there's much attraction, despite the David Ortiz, Dominican history, Dominican restaurants angle or whatever. But the fact that
these people are saying the Blue Jays are more likely to get him than you.
Yeah.
The
no,
Blue Jays, who
that
suck.
I don't really understand.
They were worse than you this year.
I just don't. It's hard for me to envision the Red Sox beating out the Yankees, the Mets, and the Dodgers.
Yeah.
If you told me the Yankees, the Mets, and the Dodgers weren't involved for whatever reason, I think I would be more hopeful.
I think Phillies,
there
too.
Was a
Dombrowski's
chance.
With the Phillies. He's getting
but
definitely
think,
bid more
I think
than
the
you.
Red Sox could outbid the Phillies. I think the Red Sox could lure him for. But I just think Yankees, Mets, Dodgers. That just seems like an unbelievable ask. Now, I will say, I don't know why you'd have a limit. Like, if you're willing to, say, go to $600 million, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you go to 620? And if you're willing to go to 620, why wouldn't you go to 640? Now, I'm not saying if you're willing to go to 600 to go to 1.2 billion, like double it. But why would there be a tens of millions of dollar difference on a 14-year deal? You can't throw an extra $2 million per year in on a deal for 14 seasons? Like, so that's where I wouldn't have a limit. And Bradfo said it too. Bradfo mm-hmm. believes they're in the $600 million range.
Yes, that was Bradfo.
$600
Maybe it was Bradfo
million
and not Spear, but yeah.
Okay, so go 650. Now, I do think you have the problem. Somebody put in the Twitch chat that Cohen is like, I'll give you 50 more than whatever your final offer is.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can keep doing that. That's like when you watch those TV shows and those people keep doing the auction and you keep
raising
it and you're like, I don't really think I have the money, but I'm kind of caught up in this. This is kind of fun.
Like in Seinfeld, here's the heiress from O. Henry and she keeps driving up the price of those John F. Kennedy clubs.
Not sure you can keep up with Cohen mm-hmm. and where he'd be willing to go. Not sure you can keep up with the Dodgers. I was reading something where the Dodgers got more money returned or more income based on the first year of Ohtani than mm-hmm. they had in their own internal projections. So they're like, well, that works so well. Let's do it again.
Let's keep doing it. Why not? You know, really, why not? There's at least three teams out there that have probably already said to Soto, whatever you get, bring it back to us and we'll top it. Do you think John Henry and Sam Kennedy and Tom Werner and all them told him that? They
Probably
didn't
not.
Discuss money. They didn't even talk money, let alone will match or beat any offer that you get. I think at this point, I've given up. I basically gave up on this a while ago, but now I think it's pretty much over.
Can I spin zone this real quick?
If they sign him, I will be shocked. I will be absolutely astonished.
Rich people don't ask how much things cost, right? In the real world, I'm talking about.
Right.
Like, if you're really rich, you don't go in the car dealership and say, hey, excuse me, what's your interest rate on a 60-month finance loan right
if
now?
You got to ask. You can't afford
it. Right? That's what they say about boats all the time. If you have to ask how much it costs to fuel a boat up, you can't afford the boat. So if you don't ask and you don't talk money, you know what that means? You have plenty of money. You're not worried about the price. That's why they didn't talk price. They're not worried about the price. They knew they just had to sell them on all the other stuff because the money is the least of the issues.
Okay.
I spun that nice.
Make Arcan. So Arcan said he'd be very surprised.
I'd be more than surprised. I'd be astonished.
What would you do?
Exactly. So now you're getting to what I'm getting at, Andy. We should
Can
think
I put
of
you
something.
In a dog? I can put you in a dog cage and pour whatever I want all over you for
That's
5 minutes.
That's getting aggressive. I was thinking like a dunk tank.
Whatever
or something.
You want. Yeah,
anything I can buy in a grocery store, I can pour all over you for 5 minutes.
Like cold plunge.
Throw eggs at them.
Cold plunge.
And if they don't get Soto, what do I get to do?
Oh, nothing.
Stiz's idea. Wait a minute. Hold on. Come on.
No, the juice is on your side because you think it's a sure win for you, right?
Well, yeah.
But if we're not putting anything up.
Well, okay, but if I win, then I should be able to pour something on you is the point here. You're the one who keeps saying that they're definitely going to get him.
I think you guys should.
What is this, the Hernandez documentary?
You guys should bet a cold
plunge. You
just
said you wanted to pour stuff on me. That was your idea.
I actually stole that from my son's fantasy football league. That's their last place punishment.
They pour stuff on each other?
I don't think anyone's ever going to go through with it. But yes, there was a certain amount of time you have to go in a dog cage and they can pour whatever they want on you.
It's weirdly erotic.
Settle down.
It is. It has like a weird undertone to it.
Stiz likes it.
I was thinking cold plunge. I think Stiz you guys should bet a cold plunge.
I've done a cold plunge. It's
okay.
Not that bad. It's good for you.
It's not
for
that
you.
Good.
Good for your health. Yeah, it's good for your health.
I have no interest in doing a cold plunge, so, but, you know.
I'll do a cold plunge
sure,
if you're right and they don't get them.
Okay. Yeah, bet a cold plunge.
And if they do get them, I do a cold plunge? Or
No. You go in a cage and we pour whatever we want all over you.
I don't think that's very fair. Yeah, Mr. Aaron Hernandez. Chris is in Holyoke. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Andy kind of beat me to my point. I do feel like that they could have said the same thing that you guys are saying they said the other team said. You know, we'll tell you all about our park. We've seen you checking out the Green Monster. We're seeing you interested in our park. But whatever you get, come back to us, and we'll match. And to me, $600 million range, as long as they said millions, it's from $600 to $699.
Yeah, sure, maybe, but they didn't talk money with him. So, you know, like that to me would be talking money.
Because he told him, don't worry about
any
the
money. Offer you get, you bring it back here, is talking money. So they didn't, I don't think they did that.
Remember when Mo Vaughn told Glenn Ordway, it's not about the money, Glenn.
Right.
It's not about the money. If he loves Boston and he loves the barbershops and he loves the food and he wants to be the next David Ortiz and he wants to, you know, pair up with Devers to be something special in the rebirth of the Boston Red Sox, we'll.
By the way. It was about the money.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
For the record.
I'm just saying what he said. 100%
about the money.
Just saying what he said.
Right.
I didn't say it wasn't about the money.
There you go. 617-779-7937. We'll get to more of your phone calls here on this topic and on the Bruins. Jim Montgomery out, according to Scoops Keefe. There's also a big Celtics game tonight against the undefeated Cleveland Cavaliers. Pretty good sports day. Pretty good little sports Tuesday here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. We're back after this.